This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hat in hand.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. It's good to have you with us this Thursday morning. In Washington today, the CEOs of some of America's big employers, the automakers, are fervently making the case for more government assistance. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports car makers face a liquidity crisis and may be running out of time.
Put simply, GM, Ford, and Chrysler are running out of money. And unless something changes soon, they won't have enough cash left to operate their businesses.
The actual time frame would vary by company.
Robert Schultz is at Standard & Poor's.
Ford does have a large unused revolving credit facility. General Motors and Chrysler really have the cash that they have now, and that is being diminished. So, you know, they're on a shorter, much shorter time frame.
Today, the industry's CEOs are headed to Capitol Hill to beg for help. They'll ask House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for two things. One, pressure the Bush administration to make cash available to the automakers immediately, either by using some of the $700 billion banking bailout or through a bridge loan from the Federal Reserve. And two, they want Congress to pass another $25 billion package of low-interest loans to help finance the industry's long-term health benefits. Without both of these steps, industry insiders say two of the big three automakers may not survive. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
New readings on retail sales and jobless claims are fanning fears of a deep recession. The Dow is down 85 points, not much above 9,000 now after yesterday's big sell-off. The NASDAQ is down 23 points, more than a percent. S&P 500 down 11 points, just over 1%. Asian and European markets fell hard today, including in London, even though the Bank of England today slashed interest rates by a startling 1.5%. This week, we are asking what President Obama will mean to individual American industries. Marketplace's Elisa Roth joins us. Elisa, what can oil and energy companies expect from Obama, given his campaign talk?
During his campaign, Obama offered some conditional support for offshore drilling. We'll have to see how far he actually takes that when he is really president. There's also talk of windfall taxes for these very wealthy companies, and that could really add up to some bad news for them. I talked to Rick Nicholson. He's a researcher at Energy Insights, and this is what he had to say.
What that really means for the oil and gas industry is they're going to have a tougher time under an Obama administration. You're going to see a slowdown in investment in technology in the oil and gas segment.
So does that mean a continued drop in oil prices?
Not necessarily. Rick Nicholson thinks they'll go back up somewhat, so that's why he thinks a windfall tax still makes sense. But another industry observer I talked to said the Obama administration really needs to cooperate with the European Union and other governments to figure out a way to use reserves and the like so that we can keep oil prices from jumping all over the place.
What does all this mean for the utility business?
There's been a lot of talk about forcing utility companies to switch to cleaner technologies. The real question is, how much money is the administration willing to invest? In any case, there's the possibility of a second stimulus package coming out of Congress, and that would likely direct money into infrastructure investments. This is what Rick Nicholson had to say on that.
What you're talking about is transforming the grid from sort of a very dumb electromechanically controlled grid to a digital smart grid.
Not only would a new grid work better, but hopefully something like it would also be more energy efficient.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth in New York. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Thursday, November 6th at Marketplace.org. America's retailers saw their sales plummet last month to the weakest October level since at least 1969. The financial crisis and mounting layoffs have left shoppers too scared to shop. So could that mean the upcoming holiday shopping season is toast? Here's Marketplace's Sam Eaton.
It's no surprise that Americans are spending less these days. Unemployment is surging and consumer confidence for October plunged to its lowest level ever. That has some predicting the worst holiday shopping season in more than two decades. Paul Nolte is a retail analyst with Hinsdale Associates. He says some retailers will be hurt more than others.
I think the opportunities lie with the much stronger financial retail companies, as well as those that are going to serve the more general public, as you were, not as upscale.
Think Walmart and its low, low prices. And as shoppers look for deals, online retailers with low overhead may fare better than their brick-and-mortar competitors. Luxury retailers like Saks and Nordstrom's may be the hardest hit. Forecasters are predicting as much as a 3% drop in sales as America's wealthiest consumers go bargain hunting instead. I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Asian markets had deep losses today. Even European stocks have been lower in spite of cuts in interest rates. The European Central Bank cut its key rate by a half point. Meantime, in the UK, British stocks are down, even though the Bank of England announced an even bigger rate cut. Here's Stephen Beard in London.
The British Central Bank has cut rates by a massive 1.5%, one of the steepest cuts on record. Clearly, the bank is extremely worried about the UK's economic slowdown, with good reason, according to figures out today. House prices fell a further 2.2% last month, and new car sales in October were 23% lower than the same month last year. Today's deep cut in interest rates takes them to 3%, the lowest level in Britain for more than 50 years. But homeowners and businesses complain that the commercial banks are still reluctant to lend. Stephen Allen-Britis of the Federation of Small Businesses.
A lot of small businesses are having great difficulty accessing loans from their bank, and so the banks themselves are beginning to be a cause of business failure.
Many economists say that in spite of today's rate cut, Britain is headed for a nasty recession. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You might have heard that Google's ad partnership with rival Yahoo is off for now. The search king is not up for a hassle with regulators over antitrust issues. You know who's happy to see the deal on ice? Consumer advocates. Here's Janet Babin from North Carolina Public Radio.
The deal would have let Google sell search ads on Yahoo's website. Together, the internet giants would have controlled more than 80% of the search market. Federal regulators said they would file suit to block the alliance over fears that less competition would make online advertising more expensive. But consumer advocates didn't like the deal for another reason. They say industry consolidation gives companies like Google a monopoly over our personal data. Jeff Chester is with the Center for Digital Democracy.
There are significant privacy risks because there are fewer and fewer companies controlling greater and greater amounts of information about ourselves that are dominating this landscape.
Advocates want the Obama administration to increase consumer safeguards that would protect online privacy. They also want regulators to strengthen antitrust laws for online companies. In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Silicon Valley is in a startup slump. The down economy has made venture capital harder to come by, and corporate research budgets are shrinking. That's given universities a leg up in the battle for new ideas. Caitlin Carroll reports from the Marketplace Innovations Desk.
So I took three pictures of you. One, two, three.
Oops, and presto, I have my own avatar winking and blinking at me from a computer screen. It's like a 3D cartoon of me. Glasses and all.
Looks kind of like you.
I turned into a man in the third picture.
I'm at Big Stage. It's a typical startup. Staffers are crammed into a small makeshift office, hammering away at their laptops. They're working with software that lets you create animated versions of yourself, or avatars, based on pictures you upload. Big Stage CEO Phil Ressler.
We allow you to essentially create the digital you for a projection of self into the digital realm.
Big Stage's software might be used by advertisers, for instance, to put avatars into commercials. Someday you could click on a website and find yourself behind the wheel in the latest car ad.
We'll end up providing the effective software service, and in some cases, some creative assistance to do that, and we'll get paid for that.
Unlike many tech startups, BigStage wasn't born in Silicon Valley. The software technology was created at the University of Southern California with a government grant. Now BigStage licenses the technology from the university. Vice Provost Christina Hawley says USC, like many schools, still has money to invest in student and faculty innovation, despite the bad economy.
One of our roles is to manage the patent portfolio or intellectual property portfolio for the university. And then we evaluate it and we say, well, does it make sense to patent this idea?
Often it does. In 2006, universities generated around $1.5 billion in research-related income, much of it from licensing agreements. As venture capital and corporate research budgets shrink, Hawley says that number will probably grow.
Industry is interested. They are looking to universities to license technologies that are coming out of the research at the universities.
Al Schneider is a venture capitalist in Los Angeles. He says that doesn't mean other startups won't be able to land investors.
The companies that have really compelling stories are going to get funded. I think that the cream will rise to the top.
For those inventors who want the leg up a university can provide, there's a little catch. You have to be in school. In Los Angeles, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
We've been telling you that one of the trouble spots in this financial crisis has been with a security called the credit default swap, basically insurance that banks took out to guard against risky investments. Part of the problem is the mysterious place they trade, the over-the-counter market. But what is the over-the-counter market exactly? We asked Rico Galliano to explain on the latest installment of the Marketplace Decoder.
Okay, to truly understand this thing, we got to take you back to the 1700s. And by we, I mean Mike Hatley, president of Westgate Horizons Advisors.
The New York Stock Exchange started in the 1700s. Before that, stocks actually traded in the general store.
A general store was like a retail outlet for stocks, and there were a bunch of general stores all over the Big Apple.
You would go to the merchant at the store if you wanted to trade a stock, and you would trade the stock literally over the counter.
Now, you know from going, say, shoe shopping, that it's tough to check out every shoe joint in town to find the best deal on that limited edition pair of Pumas. Same went for stocks. Different general stores might sell the same stock at different prices.
A number of people decided, including Alexander Hamilton, that it would be really a good idea if there was a central place to do all the stock trading, and they formed the predecessor of the New York Stock Exchange.
But even today, not every stock sells on the NYSE. Some don't sell on any exchange. Those stocks and many other financial products that aren't sold on exchanges still trade OTC, over-the-counter.
Over-the-counter trading is trading that's done in an unregulated market.
Jeff Carter is an independent speculator and a former director of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. He says unregulated is the operative word here. On a regulated exchange, traders can only work with shares listed on the exchange. OTC traders can sell anything they want, from penny stocks to complex credit default swaps. There's no middleman and few rules. Kind of like the old general store writ large. And it's not for everyone.
The average Joe on the street is not equipped to do over-the-counter trading, and they're also not probably big enough. These are big, big transactions. It's a professional market.
But recently, professionals have lost big in the OTC market, thanks to the unexpected collapse of big players like Lehman Brothers. So Carter says there are moves afoot to build in some safeguards. For instance, by creating so-called clearinghouses, which ensure traders can actually afford to make deals. And he says the government may consider some oversight, too. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
The Dow is now down 68 points. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Enjoy the day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.